he had come in to the game the week prior to our game. They put him in, I think, the second half. I think he might have been third team as a freshman. And the shocking thing about it, he was still 17 years old, so he actually probably should have still been playing for his daddy, Irvin, back down there in Kim. But so anyway, we had one film to look, we had a half to look at, and I think they put him in the second half, and he threw for either three or four touchdowns. But back at that time at A&M, now, we were as good as anyone in the country. Now, we could blitz you from the sky everywhere. Our nickname defensively were the Wrecking Crew. So anyway, we, you know, knew he was going to start and everything. I remember in that preparation, so this 17-year-old kid, he'd be scared to death after watching our blitzes. And anyway, we go into the game. It's his first start. And, hell, at the halftime, it's 13-13. And they did a great job. They stayed with two tight ends and one flanker and two backs. And we never sacked him in the entire game. In the second half, we had two outstanding players, Bucky Richardson and Darren Lewis, and both of them broke two long runs, and we beat them 27-13. And I remember before the game, I was over there walking around kind of listening to his cadence during pregame warm-up, and I thought, you know, he's a good-looking kid, and the cocky pigeon-toed walking thing, and so as it turned out, we won the game, and had no earthly idea in about 7 weeks or 6 or 7 weeks I'd be his head coach. And so I've heard a lot of the recruiting stories also about him, which should be a great motivation to kids. Mark McHale, who I kept on the staff from Coach Carmody's staff, he had recruited him. And he told these stories how that staff kept turning him down. I think he has turned down about three different times with Southern Miss. And they had Delta State and a junior college has had their fingers crossed, hoping no one would sign him. And now he's going into the Hall of Fame. And about that exact same time, out there at Oklahoma State, there was another pretty good player that was turned down by Oklahoma State several times before they took him, and that was Barry Sanders. So, you know, I tell the Brett Favre stories of motivation, all this high-powered five-stars and four-star prospects you hear all about. Brett wouldn't have had a star by him. And something funny, old Irvin, boy, just loved him to death now. And he played for his daddy naturally all those years. And so I'd see Irvin before the game sometimes, and he'd say, "Curtis, we're going to throw it a lot today." And I'd say, "Hell, Irvin, we're going to throw it just about as much as you did when you were coaching your son," which might be anywhere from one to three times a game.
So after you played him, when you were at Texas A&M and you took the head coaching job at Southern Mississippi and you knew he was going to be your quarterback, I mean, when you were – because the story is that he started off as a seven-string quarterback his freshman year, and for some reason he wound up being the starter. But when you took the job at Southern Mississippi after having seen him play against you, did you know he was your guy when you went over there?
I was pretty dadgum sure because we had two really good athletes behind him. Michael Jackson, who went on as a wide receiver and played about 9 years in the NFL, and another athletic quarterback named Sammy Carter. And, I mean, they were athletes. And for spring training, I talked to both of them because I said, what would you think if we experimented this spring? And Michael, we moved you to wide receiver, and Sammy, we move you to cornerback. And they both said, "I think it's a great idea, Coach." But, knowing that he had a very talented arm, and as time went on, he had a good football mind, and he was pretty solid student as a student athlete. And as time went on, you could see that unbelievable toughness and his love, true love for being in pressure situations. And led a little bit more by what a fierce competitor he was. And he was a great teammate and never, ever saw him disrespect. And it was early to be disrespectful to a teammate or a coach, and I think that was true throughout his entire career. But he truly loved playing the game. And when you saw that arm, and I'd seen it in person, And gee whiz, it didn't take long there. I mean, that one old boy said one time, he said, Brett Favre could throw it through a car wash and never get the ball wet.
I love and that. And he had that arm all the way through. I mean, even his final season, his arm was still incredibly strong.
Oh, it just unbelievable. It was like he was throwing BBs and stuff. But I say this, talking about his football smarts, I have never been around a football player at the collegiate level. If he played for his daddy, their football minds were excellent. And I guarantee you, Brett was probably in diapers waddling around that field house with his daddy, Irving, and they just grow up. And the football knowledge just kind of comes natural to them. And he had excellent football knowledge to go along with the other talent that he had.
Well, Coach, that's the first thing I thought about when you said that he never saw him disrespect a teammate or anything like that and was one of the best teammates. That's the first thing I thought about it. Well, it had to come from playing for his father for those many years.
Well, I think the respect for the coaching profession and the players and all those years, and you could get on the Brett Favre and you could get on him hard and heavy sometimes. The only thing you ever got out of his mouth was yes or no, sir. There's a game where we're down in the red zone and a little play action pass. He could have walked into the end zone, I think. But back at that stage, that's when Doug Flutie was doing all his stuff. You know, he'd be running and just kind of flip it underhanded and complete passes. Anyway, Brett's going to do his little Doug Flutie deal and flip it underhanded to a receiver that came open. And it should have been an interception for about 102 yards. So when he came over the sideline, I said, hey, Brett, if you do your little Doug Flutie deal again, you're going to be over here with me on the sideline, okay? And he said, yes, sir. Yes.
Curly Hallman, the former head coach of Southern Mississippi, Coach Brett Favre in his collegiate days, joining us here on The Fan. Now, I guess that old gunslinger thing started then back in his early days. Now, were you ever able to corral him? We always hear about the great stories that Mike Holmgren had with Brett and trying to corral him and stuff like that. But I guess that was just part of his DNA, wasn't it?
I was always trying to do something to for him to really consider, and never changing your body language and all that. And I said, someone that you really that you like, and you need to go back and look at films and games and watch Kenny Snake Stabler. And that's another neat thing about the induction. And Snake's an old friend that I got to know when I was summer before going into my senior year back in Tuscaloosa, Northport, where I grew up, and he was getting ready for his freshman year. So I said, Brett, you watch Kenny Stabler, body language never, ever changes. Facial expressions never, ever change during the good, the bad, or the ugly. I said, you need to study that a little bit. Well, naturally, I didn't do a very good job because in college, he's running around throwing his helmet after big plays and batting people hard on the rear ends and all that, and then he continued that in the NFL. So yeah, I didn't do a very good job there of homing him down in that area.
Now, he was legendary for some of his antics on the sidelines with his teammates in the huddle. Did you see some of that when he was in college too?
Oh, yeah. He'd take that big old hand and he'd rip them on the rear end with it and always had that smiling personality around his players and was kidding them. And that's like a natural leader. Then when teammates see how tough he is, I mean, they're going to respect that. And I remember a game against Memphis, and we kind of formed an independent league, and we scored late in the game. And to go up, it's natural. We don't need to kick the PAT. We need to go for two. Well, Brett done pulled one of his deals. He's running all the way down for the touchdown and chunked his helmet on the sideline and all that. And so we got to go for two. That was just called Albert Young up the other quarterback, and we sent him in. So finally, someone got Brett's attention over there, and And the guy that's helping, he said, "Coach, I'm ready to go. I found my helmet." I said, I said, "Alrick's got to get to keep your helmet on, then we wouldn't have this delay."
We are talking with Curly Hallman. He was the former Southern Mississippi head football coach. I had the luxury and the fortune of coaching Brett Favre in his collegiate days. You guys won some pretty big games with Brett in college. You beat Florida State. You beat Alabama. You guys won some big games.
Yeah. I remember the Florida State game. It was our home game in Hattiesburg, but we agreed to move it to Jacksonville because we needed the money, I promise you, and with our athletic budget. And they gave us $500,000, and Mr. Bill McClellan, our athletic director, which is the best one I've ever been around, he consulted me, and I said, "Hell, Mr. Mayor, we need that money. We'll go." And the heat index down there was about 106 that day. Huh. And our kid, one thing about at those kids from Brett all the way down to backups, whatever, they were in shape, and we beat Florida State. I think they were ranked number one in the country preseason and first game, and we were in better shape than them, and Brett had a really outstanding game, very poised, and big win, going to Tuscaloosa and playing Coach Stallings, Gene Stallings, who was my head coach at Texas A&M, and it's his first college game, and we go in there another hot day and pull the upset off late there. And at Auburn, we go down there, and we're down 12 to nothing. Their first four possessions, they get four field goals, 12 to nothing. I remember walking into that dressing room saying, "Great job, defense. You might have given us a chance to win the game." And yelled at Brett or something about that. "We can just pee a drop the second half, Brett. Offensive guys, we can win this game." And he showed great poise that second half and threw two touchdown passes, and I think we beat him 13-12 or 14-12. But like I said, you could get on him and he would respond. And I go back to another day. At the end of the school year, for school is out and everything, every year we take a 10-15 minute slot with every player, kind of close out year and visit with that player, et cetera. Summer goals and all that. But when I got to the question of Brett, and I'd asked him, write this stuff down, but we're talking about, your long-range goals. And it was consistent. Building rookie every year. Long-range goals, he wanted to coach, and he wanted to teach special ed. And a lot of that comes from Benita. The mother was a special ed teacher, and of course, his daddy coaching. Years later, with all his success, I was talking to him. I said, "Well, it's a dang sense that you're not going to be teaching and coaching someday, but are you doing some things with your foundation for special needs children and that kind of stuff?" And he said, "Yes, I am, coach." But hell, he wound up coaching.
Yeah, he did.
At the high school. But I always thought that was a neat story that people you get to really know a little bit down from deep in Brett's heart, his feelings. And there's one story that I laugh, and he probably don't like me to tell it because it's something he said he couldn't do. Southern Miss, I grew up in an athletic family, grew up as a little kid learning how to box, punch a speed bag and all that, and it's a tremendous exercise. Stressful. So I had a Bill Mills speed bag stand right outside our dressing room. In between 2-a-day practices, I'd go in there and do what I needed to do and get the speed bag and go out there and punch the speed bag. Uh-huh. Brett, come on one day, he said, "Coach, can you teach me how to do that?" I said, "Yeah, you got to be patient." Uh-huh. We spent about 3 mornings out there, and he never would just comprehend what I was talking about doing it. And finally, one day, he said, "Coach," said, "through my life, I've always felt like anything I tried to do, I could do it." And he said, "This is killing me. I'm so frustrated. I can't." He said, "I can't do this."
Sounds like me in golf.
Yeah. Oh, talking about golf now. Brett at one time got where he was a scratch golfer.
Yeah. Oh, he's
he's phenomenal.
Just had his tournament up in Madison a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
Yeah, he was up there. Hey, Coach, I got to ask you this. Obviously, there's a lot of great times that you had with Brett and these great wins that you had, but there was also a little bit of a tragedy, at the beginning of senior season when he got into that car accident and he had to remove some of his intestine. What was your thought process? What was going through your mind when you heard this about Brett? Because this was a serious business.
Yeah. I was at the Mississippi Sports Writers little annual summer banquet they have and everything. I think it was up in Jackson, I think. But anyway, I got a phone call from Rodney Allison, the quarterback coach, and told me there'd been an accident, et cetera, and I said, "You're kidding me," and all that. Anyway, he said, "But, you know, they think he's going to be fine." Well, I can't remember the time span after all that. Brett had started having severe, you know, pains and et cetera, and they go back and do some more research, and basically a section of his small intestine pretty much dead. And so I can't remember, but this is kind of funny now. You can laugh about it now. The, one of the sports writers wrote that, ducking out 36 feet of Brett's small intestine. Somebody said, "Well, I can understand that because he's full of crap." But they had taken out several inches of his small intestines, and so naturally, that put a little different outlook on in fall camp and everything. And I remember when we started back with him. I mean, he's a coach. I'm proud. Now, our first deal with him, he'd walk out to practice, and Hattiesburg can be hot and humid. We let him talk to the trainers and everything. He goes out there and just needs practice. Stay out there for about 10, 15 minutes and just stand and watch. Get him back out of here. Progress to him going out with a helmet on and walking around. And the progression went to just chunking some little easy passes and that. And then the doctors and everybody felt like he could, you know, be ready to start jogging and doing things like that. And so it was a progression of building up. And, boy, he reached a point where he felt like he said, "Coach, I'm going to be ready to play," and all that. And, of course, it was motivation for the teammates that they thought he might too. But so he talked to me when I said, "Brett, I'm not convinced. You know, we have to wait 1, 2, 3 games, whatever. We'll do what's right." And he said, "Oh, Coach," he said, "put me through a test." I said, "Okay, on Thursday at Alabama game." I said, "Well, we're going to find out." Told the defense. And normally Thursdays is an hour and 10 minute checklist, do this, shoulder pads, shorts on, all that. Told the defense, "We're going to have blitz pick up here, get after his fanny, mm-hmm. and let's see how he responds." So he responded pretty daggum good. So I still hadn't decided, and I think the next morning it might have been about 6 o'clock in the morning. There he is at my office. This is on a Friday, and he said, "Coach," and I said, "All right, Brett, we'll just keep it quiet. I'm going to start you. Because I can see the excitement in the players' line, and we'll go from there, whether it's one play, two plays, 10 plays, and the other kid who got so much preparation for it, you know, and we'll go from there." And started the game, and he handled it. And matter of fact, after the game, Coach Stallings and Kim, he said, "Well, I hope your quarterback's okay." And I said, "He's fine, Coach." They rolled him up on the Alabama sideline one time over there, and I said, deal for the other quarterback. He bounced up, jogged right back to the huddle. And but anybody wants to talk about how tough he is, but it was a deal where he had proved to me that he could start and play. But I was really surprised because of the conditioning that he was able to play the entire game, then pull off to just a remarkable play down the goal line to put us ahead.
Well, we saw years and years in the NFL where he got up every time and got back into the huddle and led his team. We're visiting with Curley Hallman, the former head coach of Brett Favre. Coach, how gratifying will it be when you see him getting inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
It'll be super special, and you spend your whole pretty much entire life around athletics, and then whatever sport it is, in this case it's football, and there's not many folks in the NFL Hall of Fame. So that in itself is how special to be, and the fact that you were associated with him and was his head coach, that's a little extra. And at the same time, and like I said, with Stabler going in, to me that's even a little bit extra for that day. And like I said, a new snake since I was about 17 or 18, we became dear friends and still stay in touch with Kendra, Kenny's daughter.
Yeah.
And so that's a little extra bonus that two guys and two people in there, and Ray Guy, so it's Southern Miss.
Sure.
Greatest punter ever.
Yeah. Right.
Not about that.
Brett's going to be right in there with old Ray. And so it is very, very gratifying. And going back to one other little one other little story, the talking about Brett, where he's from. Hamp Cook lived in Hattiesburg and was one of the chief big scouts for the Saints. And he'd watch Brett pretty much every day. And at senior year, I said, Hamp, and you convince Coach Morrow, y'all need to take Brett. He said, I've been trying to do that for months. And I saw Coach Morrow. And I said, Coach, sure wish you'd take Brett, y'all's first pick. And he said, Curlite, we would love to, but Roy, we got it set now. We got our fingers crossed that he's going to be there in our next pick, which it wasn't. But can you imagine over where Brett grew up in Cam, which is like the bayous of Mississippi, and how he would have fit in New Orleans? But he did a pretty good job fitting in Green Bay.
He sure did.
Another little story about Brett Favre's arm speed. When practice, if they wasn't catching the ball in practice, you know what he did? He just heated that bullet up some more, throwing it out. And Michael Jackson, the kid that was one of those backup quarterbacks, and like I said, he went on and had a heck of a 9-year career. And one day that he took Michael, who was great in catching the ball in his hands, and his right hand, he caught one of Brett's passes, and those two middle fingers, it split it. It split at the palm of the hand down about an inch, inch and a half.
Wow.
And we had a little wide receiver, one of them little 5'7" guys. We called him Mudbug. I think it was Alfred Williams, always jumping up in the air, catching the ball and stuff. We jumped up in the air in practice one day. And the ball knocked him down. And he's moaning and groaning. And I got him and I said, Mudbug, get up off the ground. He said, yo, I think he bruised my heart. And I said, what? Trying to pull his pads up, and he had busted right there at the sternum area. That ball had busted those pads open, and little Mudbug's laying there with like a half-dollar size, big old red spot already just pumping up.
Wow.
Well, he could sling it. He's not called the old gunslinger for nothing, right? Let me ask you this, Curly. Did you think, even though you're watching all this and you had a front row seat during his college days to watch him, did you think that he would wind up being this good and a Hall of Famer in the National Football League?
I never thought about, you know, any time, you know, like a youngster and and after his first season with Atlanta, he didn't play that much. But but going back to those things that I mentioned earlier about his talented arm and the football mind and a good student and all those things, and he loved pressure. And sometimes pressure separates someone from being an average player to a good player or from a good player to a great player. And we use the word great and love too much in our society anyway. I've been around very few great talents. People ask me this question. Is Brett the greatest player you ever coached? I said, not at that time. Terry Kinnard, that I coached at Clemson, might have been the most dominating player. But I knew Brett could be a great player and could be that good in the NFL, just rid himself of some of the wasted energy that he had in his life, but I knew he could be special. But for me to say, oh yeah, I really thought him, you know, at the collegiate level or early in his career, that he'd been NFL Hall of Famer. But it didn't take but a few more years to me say, yeah, he can be, and just like I said, a special talent. And so, anyone says they knew that he was going to make it, an individual was going to make it all the way to any Hall of Fame. Sometimes we exaggerate, but I knew that he had the talent to be very, very special.